You are very welcome to Cawley's Call with me, Alan Cawley, powered by Benetti Menswear, a topical debate show covering all things Irish football, along with 1v1 interviews with top-class sports stars from a wide range of different sports.
It's me that's putting on the green jersey, me that's going to take flak from people to say, you're not even Irish. I was big enough to say, I'm going to take it.
There's many people I've spoke to, they always say, I used to put money on you scoring the first goal, but I've never seen any of that money, though.
And Andy, he says, I want the performances that I got from you in Scotland with you under 16s, not that rubbish that you gave me over in Oslo.
Yeah. Hi, everyone, and you're very welcome to Series 2, Episode 24, we think it is.
I think it's Episode 73. 73. It feels like that, anyway.
Paul reckons it's 26, but I'm telling you, it's 24. He's jumped way ahead. Paul has jumped a gun, baby.
We were wondering, like, at what point does it get to where, at what episode number does it get to where you kind of go, you're past it,
or
you're in your prime, or you're not even in your prime.
So where are we? I'd say we're still getting up to that stage.
We're building up to our prime. Yeah.
Let the listeners decide and tell us, Stu. But we missed you last week, Stu. We missed you. We had Georgie Kelly in studio, lovely lad, and.
Yeah,
obviously, whatever we said to Georgie paid and worked, because he banged in probably the goal of the season last night. He was absolutely brilliant in the match.
Whatever you say in this room stays in this room. Okay. Now, you missed out. You had a great opportunity, right? A modern question for modern day players, okay?
Okay, tell me.
What is the safest number of hours before a match? Maximum number of hours before a match you can have sex. It used to be 48 hours.
Did you ever break that rule?
Never broke a rule. Ever. Never broke that rule.
No,
48-hour rule. Minimum.
But who brought in that rule?
I think it was...
Did you ever have a manager that actually would say that to you?
I think Nutty would be... Yeah, 40, Nutty would I be a 48-hour. Yeah.
Did Pat say that?
I think he might have said it, yeah. Yeah, 48 hours minimum. It might even have been 72 hours. But no, Wednesday.
Because I heard a conversation
before
the other day.
7:45 on a Wednesday. So if you think about it, right, you you're not really going to do anything before 7:45 at any time.
6 o'clock, Neven's a good time to be doing it.
If you're a young man, I suppose we were young men, weren't we? Yeah.
We were young men, yeah.
Nando's, the Jacks of Nando's. That's why the Pats players used to love to go to Nando's. I say there was something going on in the Jacks.
The afternoon. Before
of a Wednesday.
Before the threshold kicked in.
Of a Wednesday, yeah.
Of a Wednesday. Okay, Stu, yeah, we missed you last week, but we did have George in. Really good response to it as well. He's a great lad. I think that was his 16th league goal last night, and he's playing ever so well, flying it.
Wow. 16th league goal?
Yeah.
And he didn't score for the first... Was it five games?
Because they got off to a poor run, boys. Yeah, well. So he's on 16 now. So he should hit 20, you would think. And we will come to that game. We're going to cover that game. Two huge games in the league over the weekend. Obviously, the game last night, because the two teams vying for Europe. And of course, we had Sligo Rovers playing Shamrock Rovers on Saturday evening. We're going to come to as well. I watched that. And I'm actually going to give Shamrock Rovers credit. So imagine that. I'm actually going to give them credit, Stu. No, they played very well.
Let me just get the camera up.
They played very well.
Yeah.
And all their sensitive supporters might actually say, look, he actually gives them credit. So they might understand that I am fair.
Well, they won't change. It's a seized mentality thing. So if you were saying they were great, they'd tell you to fuck off anyway.
Yeah, they would, wouldn't they?
Yeah, that's just the way it is. We're used to that. Come on, we used to do the same thing.
Exactly. Yeah. But no, and so that's the two league games, and we're going to cover obviously the cup. I was in Belfield, Stu, and I know last night people were saying the league game, the 3-3 draw, was the game of the season, and it was a brilliant
game. Looked like that anyway from the goals.
The game on Friday night in Belfield was the best game I've seen in years. It was unbelievable. It was better than last night's game.
Tell me, 3-2 Waterford.
3-2 Waterford, yeah. So we'll kick it off with that one. 3-2 Waterford, absolutely brilliant in terms of pure value entertainment from minute one right up to minute, I think the injury time goal came was at 92 or 3 or whatever it was. Unbelievable game. Had a bit of everything.
When you say value for money now, how much did you pay for your ticket? It's all relative.
About 47 cent. They looked after us.
Did you buy a cup
Big
of
Derek on the gate, tickety boo.
Was he?
Yeah, Big Derek, yeah.
Legend.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
Great.
So it was nice to see Derek. But no, it was a brilliant game, and UCD added so much to it, and UCD were really, really
unlucky. I thought they were going to win it, yeah.
Well, they went 1-0 up, yeah. They went 2-1 up. Andy Myler, cracking young players, obviously Whelan, the Irish under-21 international, got a great goal for them. But there was a young boy who was with Sligo, Stu, Liam Kerrigan is his name, and he went up then to UCD with Jack Heaney, both of them left together. And to do their studies, and they're doing the course. outstanding on the night. He was absolutely to the point where Waterford actually changed their left back twice. They brought on two. He was brilliant.
And young Ozam is there as well, isn't he?
Ozo's son is playing, Evan. And Evan actually played the other side. Evan normally plays on the left, but he played over on the right the other night, played very well. But they've a really good side. And they just go out and play and attack, like most UCD teams over the years, probably because you could say there's no pressure on them, there's no expectation as such. Yeah. But so they just go out with a freedom and go out and express themselves and play. And it added to the game because Waterford, to be fair, were much the same and had a go. They kind of caught Waterford, I'd say, off guard at the start, because for 20 minutes they absolutely battered Waterford. And until Waterford got to grips with the game and understood exactly that these boys are not bad, and they started to get a foothold in the game, and then they kind of imposed themselves on the game, and it just made for an absolute cracker, to the point where, Stu, at 2-2 we're all sitting around, and it was a good crowd as well. Waterford, a brilliant crowd with them actually, and we're all sitting around saying, is it going to extra time? We weren't sure whether it was finished on the night or whether it was going to extra time, and people were asking the question because we actually wanted another half an hour of it. It was that good. And then they went up the pitch. UCD were on a breakaway. It was hard to tell where we were, but it was over the side closest to the dugout where Andy Myler was, and they were up in arms straight away. And I've been told afterwards by people who were sitting further up the stand that it was a free kick, and the ref never gave it. Waterford won the ball, came down the pitch, and of course they scored off that attack, and that was the last kick of the game. So Andy Myler went nuts. And it's not like Andy. We know Andy well. It's not like him, to be fair, but he was really, really annoyed and irate. Got himself sent off. But an absolute brilliant, brilliant game of football.
Yeah, well, it sounds like. I mean, like you said, I thought UCD, I thought they really had Waterford in trouble, you know, especially scoring so early. And I've seen UCD a couple of times this year, just through Shep. Well, yeah, a couple of times, yeah. And
they impressed me. They were decent, yeah.
I know is it Colin Whelan is the lad that is sort of on the tips of everyone's tongues. I think that night, I think Jim Crawford might have been down watching him as well. Like, you know,
Jim was there again the other night now watching him. And by all accounts, like typical UCD every year in terms of the better players and their best players, they lose them. So it's just a case of whether he finishes out his studies. But I think all the clubs are circling around all right.
That's interesting that you bring up young Kerrigan. When did he go to UCD? This summer?
No, the previous one.
Previous one was on.
So this is, I think this is his second full season, Liam.
Right. Now, just thinking about the whole back to college thing, and I wondered, does the college kind of get maybe a little bit of a bounce, you know, what I'm thinking of, you know, you've got lads from the country mightn't decide to go to college, mightn't have decided to go to college last year, they might have decided to you know, do it from home or whatever the case may be. Like, but it certainly seems like that UCD are starting to kind of pick up those young talented players again. I mean, when you look at the league, and even when we played, it has an incredible history of bringing through young players, developing them, giving them game time.
I put that to Georgie last week, Stu, because obviously Georgie was at UCD and came through. And for the knockers and all the knockers that they do have in terms of, like, do they bring a crowd, what are they offering, what are they bringing to the table, there's absolutely no debate or argument when it comes to the players that are on the pitch and have come through the league.
Yeah, no, I
got it all over the league.
You can't disagree with it, like, you know, and I think that's a model that was put in place by the Doc, right? He was an integral part of that, like, you know. And I think people would have had a gripe against UCD maybe back in our day, because when we played, like, it was primarily a fully professional league, like, you know, and we hadn't as of yet then seen the fruition of young players coming to UCD. They were only at UCD at the time, so maybe might have been guilty of having a gripe against them. I think we've seen the real benefit of players that played at UCD probably 2010 onwards. Maybe I'm trying to thinking of Greg Bulger.
I'd say before that, Kieran Martin.
Let's throw a few names out. Kieran Martin, yeah, well,
was part of my team. Kieran, Barry Ryan, goalkeeper. Do you mean
Clyde
lads
Delaney?
That went on and
I'm thinking lads that went on and played at played high
Kieran
level.
Aaron played with Derry in the Clive Derry
Delaney
teams.
Went to Australia, didn't he?
Clive played with Derry as well.
Yeah.
I went on. Then, as you say, after that, I think there was Ronan Finn, a couple of them, Gary Dicker, Greg Bulger. Yeah. Best of players.
Yeah. Yourself.
Me.
Are you including yourself in the best of players?
Yeah.
Yeah. You showed in there, didn't you? Well done. Yeah, you, yeah.
But no,
you were the most controversial.
Yeah, I was. Yeah, we won't. And who did I meet out there the other night?
All sorts of trouble.
Only Dick Shakespeare, and he brought it up.
Go away. Did he?
Brought it up with me in a half time having a cup of tea.
Still bitter?
Well, I was caught up in, for people that don't know, I was caught up in the wranglings between whatever gripe he had against Ollie and Ollie Burndis is. And of course, I was the meat and the sandwich, unfortunately. And
poor young, unfortunate you.
I ended up in the high courts.
I remember that story. Yeah. I do remember it. Yeah. You should talk about that actually maybe in another episode.
I will. Well, it was.
I imagine that it must have been very difficult for you. Actually, have you ever spoken about how difficult it was for you?
No, I never did, no.
No.
I've told people a story, but I've never actually spoken because the most difficult it got, I was living with Ollie and Dave, and obviously we were training at the time, and Pat was doing everything to help me, and he was brilliant, and Ollie Byrne, and they could have easily kind of washed their hands in terms of it was getting messy and it was getting drawn out and dragged out, and it was going to be a bit of a rigmarole to get it sorted out. But they hung in there and stuck with me and all. But Pat came to me one morning and he says, "You can't come training." And I was like, "What do you mean?" Because even though they were fighting it, I was still able to train, obviously, but I couldn't play the games. And Pat came to me then one day and he says, "You can't come training." And I was like, "What do you mean you can't come training?" He says, "We're going to fight it that they're now trying to stop you earning a living. And this was the road we were going down." And it ended up in the high courts.
Yeah.
I was going into the high courts. There's fellas coming out with handcuffs after 11 weeks. And all I wanted to do was play a game of ball. Jeez. And it fucked things up in terms of, I'll be honest with you now, Shu. What people don't know, I did that pre-season. So that was a big move for me.
Yeah,
UCD to Shelton was a huge move to sign me and Glenn. And I went in thinking, this is the start of me, kind of, my career again.
Yeah.
Going full-time, going to Shelburne, the best team in the country with a brilliant team. And busting me balls in pre-season, got myself really fit, got named in the team.
I think you would have been starting,
I was starting that Friday night, and Pat pulled me into the office, and at 5 o'clock, says, "I can't play yet." And I was like, "What do you mean?"
I do remember that, all right, yeah.
And couldn't play, and he says, "Look, let me get the game out of the way, and we'll sort it out tomorrow." So I was thinking, fair enough. Sat in the stand. He won the game 2-1 11 weeks later. So in that 11 weeks, obviously Wezzo, and you know how much we all love Wezzo, and I'm not saying I would have been playing ahead of Wezzo, but I started in the team ahead of him, and then of course Wezzo came into the team, and it took me then, I was out for 11 weeks. By the time I got back, the team was settled. Now I came on and contributed in all the games. But I often ask myself the question, where would things have gone, or where would have been had I not missed that 11 weeks?
And do you think it's like psychologically you felt that, like, just sort of, it's always difficult to come into a team, about 3 months in nearly?
No,
two and a half months in.
That part of it I felt fine because I was coming on nearly every match and contributing, and we went on to win the league and it was great. The problem for me was the following season then, when Pat signed all the Bowes lads, so we had a brilliant Shells team, then he signed the Bowes lads. So now we had like 22 top quality players.
Yeah.
But I was nearly down the pecking order just with the brilliant Shells team.
Yeah.
Then he signs the Bowes fellas. So I never really got a fair... I'm not saying Pat didn't give me a fair crack. The 11 weeks set me back so much that I'm saying, had I started that Friday night and established myself in the team and went on for the season and played every week, even if those Bowes fellas signed and I was established in the team, they might not have got into the team,
So who was that game against? Can you remember who
Shamrock
it was?
Rovers. The first match,
Shamrock Rovers.
A huge match, and I'll never forget, it was horrendous. Like, and I, Pat was brilliant, and Pat says to me, "Look, we'll sort it out tomorrow." Tomorrow went into 11 weeks.
Yeah.
I have to give Fran Gavin his credit, because Fran Gavin was the head of the PFEI at the time, and Fran stuck with me every day, and we actually became really friendly throughout it, because he was with me every day of the week fighting this. And as I say, it came to a head in the high courts.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not surprised to hear that about Fran. I mean, because when Fran was head of the PFEI, I think he was...
excellent.
He did an excellent job. But just unfortunately, when he went to the FEI, he just became a different person.
Yeah.
It was like night and day, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, it was, yeah. Yeah.
But
so that was that anyway. But look, we're gone way off. On
so you are over, are you, right?
Sure. Give me another Guinness.
I think we should actually be allowed drink on this podcast.
We will, yeah.
That's what we should do. Just drink anyway. Don't tell people. They won't know.
All right, well, we have an announcement. We have an announcement, Shu.
Announce away.
We have an announcement. We spoke last week. Well, I gave a little bit of a teaser that we're planning a live event, which we are. Drink, Guinness, whatever you want.
Will it be,
music. You're
proper,
gonna
sing. We won't be allowed.
No, not at this one. This is the big one. When we're going to have the big one, we're going to have Guinness, music, you name it. Guests, quizzes, whatever you want, right? We're going to have the whole lot.
Right.
No, we are going to have a big live event. I kind of gave a little bit of a taster last week, but I didn't want to announce it fully when you weren't here. I wouldn't do that to you. But we have a mini a mini announcement as well.
A kind of a pilot kind of come prep for
this. Yeah, without the crowd, but this is a big one as well because we've agreed that not next week, but the week after, we're going to have a live show. We'll put it out live on YouTube or whatever, obviously record the podcast. But we're going to go down and meet up with Jim Crawford, the Irish under-21s manager, and John O'Shea, and sit and have an hour and 15 minutes with them.
John O'Shea, who's he? Yeah.
You know Jim. So yeah,
that's a good lineup, by the way.
So yeah, stay tuned for that, folks. We're going to record it live at the hotel. Obviously, the 21s are meeting up for their camp the first week of October, and we're going to record that. And as I say, we're going to do it live as well and put it out on. I'd say it'll be on YouTube or whatever.
You should get people to send in their questions.
There you go. Perfect. So
hit you up on Collie's Call, is it?
Great idea, Stu. Yeah. Anyone that wants to ask Jim Crawford or John O'Shea a question, just send in your questions, because we will be doing that in 2 weeks' time, this day 2 weeks, and we're looking forward to it. So there you go. Thank you. That was a good idea, Stu.
Nice one.
So the other game then, obviously the Brilliant Cup tie, was the other one that was amazing by all accounts, and I've seen some of the highlights of this one. Finn Harps and Dundalk, and 3-1 up, Stu.
I couldn't get over the equaliser.
Sean
Boyd.
Brilliant.
The touch and the
great
finish.
Goal, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah,
and he's had a rough time, Sean. Yeah, a really rough
incredible.
Time.
Incredible. Yeah. Really, like...
delighted for him. Because I've heard over the weekend, I put out a tweet just saying it was great for him because he has had a rough time. And the amount of responses that came back, people saying he's a great lad, because I basically said, I don't know anything about the lad, don't know him, but delighted for him and a great goal. And he's gone through a lot in his young career, because when he broke on the scene, he scored that brilliant goal, I think, against Bohemians for Shamrock Rovers. Yeah, and everybody was thinking, here we go. Here's an up-and-coming star. Things didn't work out from then. And then he had a horrendous injury when he was away with the PFEI team. And obviously he was fighting his way back. Dropped down. Ollie Horgan's taking a chance on him. So to see him come on and score two, magic for him.
Yeah, no, and it'll do. Hopefully it does his confidence a world of good. But the quality of the equaliser is just outrageous. Outrageous. I mean...
the touch was unbelievable.
I couldn't believe it. Like, you know, just touch is unbelievable, yeah. And just set him up to put in the back of the net. And just the sheer, I mean, what was it, 95 minutes?
Yeah. Like 10 men.
You're probably waiting for the whistle to go. I mean, I'm sure even when you look at Dundalk as well, yeah, 10 men, you look at Dundalk, they're probably literally thinking this whistle's going to go. Like, you know, no one's gone to head it or whatever the case may be. They'd squeezed up, right? Mm-hmm. And then they just get caught in and... I don't know, what is it about the results lately? It just seems to be
unbelievable.
The crowd's coming back in.
Well, the beauty of that, what I felt was the cup, the magic of the cup, and it was that, like the two games, obviously with the UCD one I was at and that one, so you're putting it down to that. And but then that last night, as you say, we had a 3-3 cracker in Daly Mount. So I don't know what it is, but we have to give Finn Harps credit, Stu, because they have been on a brilliant run of recent weeks.
Especially in the league. Yeah, their league form, they've completely turned it around.
So for them to be on that run and then obviously to be 3-1 down and down to 10 men, to fight back, absolutely brilliant. And of course the replay is tonight, and by all accounts, well, because of Dundalk, not only their form and the issues going on with Dundalk, but they're after being hit with COVID cases. I think there's 4 confirmed.
They
already have injuries on top of that as well, so it gives Finn Harps an unbelievable chance to get to a semi-final of a cup.
I don't know what's going on if players are still getting COVID. I mean, it's look, I get it, right? You know, it's obviously, you know, they're professional footballers, and this thing is still around. Obviously, it is, and there's an attempt to get back to some sort of normality, but just you still like to think that this process is there to stop these lads. Like, I mean, because COVID is, it's such a game changer now in the obviously for everyone, but in the game of football, you know, look what it's done to Dundalk. It could knock
them out of the cup.
Them out of the cup, you know, and it could completely destroy their season. So I don't know. I mean, is it definitely 4 confirmed?
I heard 4 confirmed yesterday.
I know it was 5, a potential 5 yesterday.
Now, I'm the 4, no names, but I heard 4. Now, I don't know if there's close contacts to that as well. Does that rule them out? I don't know. We won't know until, I suppose, we see the team sheet.
Did Finn Harps, have Finn Harps already done Dundalk in the league up there this year? Did they do them earlier in the season? Trying to think back
on the Dundalk thing. Tell me this. I wanted to ask you, Stu. Like, it's unacceptable, really, where Dundalk have. Like, whatever about. Like, we've seen history of it, right?
Yeah.
And clubs being successful, and then things going wrong, and we seem to be good at it in this country, the clubs, in shooting ourselves in the foot when you're in a position of power. But I've never seen a club in a position of power like Dundalk's to go from that power to nothing.
No, I totally agree with you. I get what you're saying. I've seen lesser clubs with lesser resources fall down
five or six places.
For whatever different reason, but never. I agree with you there. Never seen a club like Dundalk, who were walking this league for years and had ample resources, had a huge budget. Never seen a club just completely fall down. And it's purely to do with the running of the club. It's a shambles, because there's now, obviously what's happening this year is that they're trying to move players on because they're trying to reduce the budget. They seem to bring in players willy nilly from everywhere and anywhere, all in one go.
But the problem I felt, Stu, even going back to the start of the season or in the off season, the players that were moving on are the wrong players.
You're losing Massey, Gannon, Sean Hoare, Shields.
You're the core of what built the success.
Yeah, well, you got to look
and
at who's made,
is bringing in outsiders.
Who's made those calls?
I don't know.
Because see, Vinny's gone, right? So Vinny would know that. Okay, regardless, and I know there's probably discontent there with the players and Vinny or whatever the case may be. But still, if Vinny's at the club at the start of the season, you're keeping Shields, you're keeping Massey, you're trying to convince them to stay on board. And I agree with you there, so what you're doing is you're losing that experience and that knowledge, those players who will pull the younger ones aside or those who don't know anything about the club. Mm. And there are plenty of them now.
That's what
because they brought them in from all over Europe. They don't really know the culture of the football club. They're probably a little bit naive.
They don't even know the culture of the league. Anything about it.
Probably a little bit naive towards what the club has achieved. And absolutely, of course. So that's
The goalkeeping issue was another major problem. So Gary finishes up.
Yeah, they haven't. Yeah,
never replaced. And never as you say, and to be fair, you've been saying this 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, Gary should have been replaced a couple of years. Yeah. What should have happened with Gary was Gary should have somebody should have come in. Gary as an understudy to Gary. Gary probably would coach him, brought him along, and then Gary goes in as sub keeper for a couple of years. And instead, he's playing right up until the end.
Yeah,
which just doesn't make sense. I'm sure Gary will openly admit that himself. It's just a rarity in the game. I know goalkeepers are expected to go a little bit longer, but it was just crazy. And I know Stephen Kenny's tried to address that. I think he tried to bring in Morphy, didn't he? The Waterford goalkeeper at some stage didn't work out. I think that was probably three years ago, if memory serves me right. But didn't work out because Stephen moved on to the 21s and Vinny didn't pick up the slack.
And the things we're highlighting there are the footballing side of things. Then whatever's going on off the pitch seems to be an absolute shambles altogether.
Yeah, and it's all very quiet. It's all very, very quiet.
There's no one seems to be taking control. No leadership. There's no.
No, no. In my opinion, they're looking for it. They're looking to get out of the club, and they probably have been since the start of the season. And it's not happening. And that is just creating doubt. And so there's no certainty around the club. There's no consistency.
And is there a show? Here's one, just playing devil's advocate, for all those misgivings or whatever is going on, the things we highlighted there, players and recruitment and issues off the pitch and management and culture and leadership or whatever, the owners, they still have a good group of players there. And I know there's injuries at the moment, but they're losing in Longford.
Yeah.
You look at some of the results lately, the loss down in Sligo, you look at the loss up in the 3-3 there, Finn Harps, the loss in Longford. At what stage do the players have to say, there's all this noise and stuff going on, but a bit of personal and professional pride?
Yeah, no, I think you're right there. I think there's no way that group of players should be in that position.
Should be ninth. It's a disgrace that they're ninth.
They've literally just. I mean, if we think back to, I think was it mid June, Dundalk were mid table. Still looking in Europe. We were still kind of having this conversation. They can still turn it around, whatever the case may be. But the unfortunate thing is they've had a good European run.
Yeah.
That hasn't kicked them on, which is very strange.
They went the other way.
They went the other way. And there's almost been a collapse in the space of 4 or 5 weeks where on top of the fact that Harps have found form, Drogheda have kind of stopped the rot there a little bit. Waterford had had found form early in the summer as well. So the momentum has gone with all the clubs around them, and they just can't seem to pick up points. And the issues, whatever the issues are, I mean, let's have a look at their goal difference at the moment. What is -9? So the issue seems to be more
The goalkeeper issue, and
more scoring goals than anything. Like, you know, I mean, look, they've only scored. Have a look all together. 29 goals scored, 38 against. Goalkeeping issue was always big thing for me. I think I think that back four have just lost faith in the goalkeeper, in the person behind them. And it's something that happened right at the start of the season, and it's always difficult.
Will they be relegated?
No, I can't see them being relegated. I mean, you know.
Well, we couldn't see them being ninth.
Yeah, well, I mean, if they have a game in hand on Waterford, that's to go ahead of them. I just couldn't possibly see
it. But you
it.
Couldn't fancy them against anybody at the moment.
I couldn't. Yeah, but it's just it has to click in at some stage. It has to. I mean, what will happen? Look, we're in, like, you know, I was actually about to say we're in September there. We're nearly in October, like, you know. So we're definitely getting down to that business end of the season. What you'll see is the teams around them will start to tire, you know, because of, just through the sheer exertion of the season. And I think fitness levels at Dundalk should be enough to see them kind of creep up a couple of places.
So you don't think they will be relegated?
I don't think so, no.
Okay.
No.
I don't want... thing we want is Dundalk relegated. Like, the story has been just unbelievable. And that's what annoys me the most about it. Like, as much as it's unacceptable and it's unforgivable, nearly, the position that they're in, but it's tinged with sadness for me as well, because they were so good. And we want the league to flourish and to be as good as it can be. And you need as many good teams for it to be as good as it can be. They were one of our teams, and now they're gone.
They were the poster boys. Like, you know, I mean, and like, I've actually, I can't believe I'm actually thinking about it back to this, but even in the early stages of the Dundalk era, you know, when they were dominating, I remember even saying to myself, you only get a certain time limit of this, because history proves it year on year out. Like, you know, it was us Shells, then it was might have been Bowes, then it was Shamrock Rovers, and no team ever dominates for more than four or five years. It never happens, like, you know. And I was even saying to myself, even though when I was looking at Dundalk, going, Jesus, they're miles ahead of everybody else, but you're going, it's not going to last, you know, because someone's going to catch up. And it was Rovers or it was Cork, whatever. Someone's going to eventually catch up, and then you kind of you start again. And it's happened, you know. It's happened. It's the rate at which it's happened, and the rate at the collapse. And the really upsetting part for me is that if Peak Six pull out Dundalk,
what are they left with?
The ground's shit.
Oh, it's the ground.
Pitch is shit. There's not an awful lot there for someone else to come in and build on, like, you know. Yeah, it's a shell of it. And all they can look back on is I don't even know if Peak Six pull out. Did they pull? They've all the money. I mean, the money that they've earned from their two group stage Europa League years. What you talking, 6-7 million?
Well, if they pull out, the squad will be decimated because they'll all leave. And now maybe some of the fans want some of them to leave at the moment. But what kills me, and what the success was built on, was that there was always a core group of players. But the heart and soul has been ripped out of that now. There is no core group. The fellas we used to always mention and rely on, and Shields and Massey and Gannon.
Goes to show you the importance of experience, but doesn't. I know managers sometimes often have to fight against supporters or whatever for signing, you know, experienced players or players, but they're worth their weight in gold. Some of them, especially the right ones, like, you know, their weight in gold.
So that's Dundalk, Stu. So obviously the game tonight, and it'll be interesting to see what happens, but you would have to fancy Finn Harps. So the league action over the weekend, Shamrock Rovers played Sligo Rovers. I watched the game Saturday night, and I have to say, it's the best I've seen Shamrock Rovers in all season. It was a great performance. And you know why?
What were Sligo like? But I mean, is it relevant?
Sligo were okay. And Sligo have been on
it. So they were at it, Rovers, Shamrock Rovers.
They were just better than them. Yeah. And the reason being, I'll tell you why I felt it was their best performance. Not because they played any amazing silky football or any kind of blew Sligo Rovers away and created loads of chances and scored 3 or 4 goals. It was more to do with the fact that they were going to Sligo, who were coming off the back of 2 good wins against Pats and Dundalk. Their tails were up. the crowd was back. There was a feel good factor in the showgrounds. So it was a tough game on paper for Shamrock Rovers. But you know what they went down and did, Stu? It was real polished professional performance. They went down almost with a swagger about us and thought, we're the champions. We're coming down here. We're going to be better in all departments than ye are. We're going to be more efficient than ye in all departments, and we're going to get the job done. And that's exactly what they did. And they always kept Sligo at arm's length. It was a case of just holding them at bay, holding them off, taking control of the game. They dominated the first half. Shamrock Rovers really good. Gaffney, who I've been critical of, was brilliant. And for all the praise I've given Mahon and Buckley at centre half, and they've been great all season, the two of them, Gaffney gave them the runaround most night. He was really difficult. He was a real difficult customer to deal with. He got the goal. But the whole night, even though it was only 1-0 or whatever, I just felt, and even speaking to people afterwards, well, you could tell, but I think even the general consensus down home was that they were just better on the night than them, Shamrock Rovers. So it was a very, very good performance from them.
Yeah, I think two things there for me is that when you hit this stage of the season, you're 6 weeks to go, or I don't know what the exact thing is, but you're really in the business end of it. That's really when pressure comes on everybody, whether it be your bottom of the table or you're close to the bottom, and there's a way of handling that, or whether you're up the top and you're pushing on to try and go and win a league title, it's a terrible term, but you see the men from the boys, really. You do, because you know they've got a...
That's the reality of it.
Yeah, pressure on Rovers. They've got to keep it going. I think we spoke about this before. I always felt at this stage of the season, we won league titles because we kept a level of consistency and a level of, we kind of never dropped below an 8 out of 10 every week. You know, we always hit a certain level of performance. Now, sometimes during the season we'd hit a 10, we'd be outstanding. But I never remember us...
A 5.
I never remember a 5. And at the end of a season, coming into the real business end of it, I never remembered us ever being 10 or 6. It was always 8, 7, 8, 9. Yeah, and we just kind of... Because you're getting tired, you know, you're losing players to injury, to suspension. It's that time of the year. So the top teams, they just keep that level of consistency. And I knew Rovers would always do that, and the fact that they find themselves top of the table, 6 points clear with the game in hand, it's looking now like...
They should run away with it now.
I mean, Friday's going to be... We'll tell that. But that's my opinion of... I think what's happening is Rovers are just staying in that... They're in, you know, fourth, fifth gear. They're staying in fifth gear. Everyone else is getting tired, dropping their standards.
And that, like Sligo are third in the table there, and as I said, they've had a good week in terms of the results against Pats and Dundalk, but just looking at it, you could still see the gap. Yeah. Shamrock Rovers are better than them.
I just wonder how big a difference the crowd makes, and the floodlights and the night games. It's a huge difference.
We were in Daly last night. The lights, as you say, the place hopping.
It's always made a difference, and that's why. I mean, I've often gotten stick for this. I always enjoyed the alternate season, the winter season. Call it the winter season.
Now, I would disagree totally.
No, I'm not going to go there, by the way. I'm not going to go there. There are pluses and minuses. I think there's a huge benefits to the summer. But do you know what? I love the fucking floodlights.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'd agree with that.
They were brilliant. Yeah. They were just a different animal altogether. You felt better. You felt full of energy.
And you were feeding off the energy.
You fed off the energy. Yeah, you did. So... I always really enjoy this time of the season, because they think there's just an edge to the games, and I think what you're seeing there is that obviously Rovers are obviously feeding off that as well, and they're kind of I mean, no one's going to catch them now.
No, well, in saying that, and I suppose you mentioned it a few minutes ago about the games at the moment and what's going on with the scores and stuff. If Pats were to beat them, and it kind of opens it up a little bit again, who knows? Obviously, you're working on the game, eh, Friday night?
Yeah.
So Pats and Shamrock Rovers are playing Friday night on the telly, which in Richmond Park, it'd be interesting. Like, for the neutrals, do you want to see Pats win? Because we want to keep the race kind of going.
You do want to see Pats win, because the last thing you want to see is a team walk. Yeah, it doesn't look good. Like, it looks terrible, but... I know if I'm a Shamrock Rovers player, I don't give a fuck about that. They want to put Pats to the sword.
Yeah.
I think Pats has been a thorn in their side this year, so they've always played well against them. And yeah, it should be a good one because, you know, again, we talk about the floodlight games. They're always a they always have an edge to them. And Inchy Carr, nice tight pitch, so it should be a bit of a dinger. Like hopefully there's good energy. Hopefully there's no sendings off, as we might.
We're coming to that.
As that could be lead you into our next segue.
No, we're just gonna. I'm gonna touch on the game last night, and then I want to get your views on the whole.
Okay, let me just repeat what I was gonna say there, and then what did I say? Maybe it leads into the next thing you're going to say.
So last night I was in Dalymount, 3-3, brilliant game, Stu, absolutely brilliant. And obviously these two clubs are the chasing pack to get into Europe, the hallowed kind of the holy grail as it is at the moment, getting into Europe.
I saw your little Instagram story with Harry.
Oh yeah, Harry was there. St. George,
he's loving, isn't he? And who else was there with you?
Richie Sadlier. Sadlier was at the match.
I didn't get an invite. Paul, did you get an invite?
Paul's not here.
Garage, you getting in, boy? No.
And we got well looked after.
Was he trying to sell you a Volkswagen?
It was out charging outside as he was watching the match.
Volkswagens are great.
So, yeah, we were there, and Harry loves Georgie Kelly. Georgie gave him a shout out last week, and Harry repaid him last night, gave him a big high five as he was coming off the pitch.
Oh, my God. Wow.
But, no, Georgie is flying, and it was a great game, but I have to say, Derry were very hard done by. Stu played very, very well.
Yeah, saw the goals quality.
Bohemians were sloppy, especially in the second half. They were very, very flat, which is unlike them. Normally, you think of them and the energy to play with and the attacking brand of football that they like to play. Unbelievable goals. Lane Burt started off, would have got an unreal goal. But to be fair to Derry, they were a better team in the second half. They went 2-1 up. Then Georgie Kelly gets a header, 2-2.
By the way, was it an OG?
It could have been an OG.
Yeah, I think it might have been. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's either come off a shoulder or it's an OG.
Could have been an OG.
I think it might have been an OG, yeah. But he's there, he's causing hassle.
And
all counts.
But then a sloppy mistake from Finnerty, and Akintunde comes in with a brilliant finish, lobs it over the keeper, 3-2 in, and I think that was on 90 minutes, yeah, or thinking game over. And then Georgie Kelly produces the moment of the season, Stu. When it came in first,
he thought he was going to head it.
It looks like it's set up for a header. And then when he doesn't head it and he chests it, I was like, why did he fucking head it?
Yeah.
And then out of nowhere, bang, volley turns just basically like a scissors kick type volley, bang, into the far corner. Unbelievable moment.
For his height, he has, you know, and what would you give him? I know he's not tall, but he's a big lad. But he has that sort of nimble ability, doesn't he? You know, to be honest with you, his control with his chest and to get it down as well. From such a height, because it was a high cross, it wasn't one of them that kind of came straight in at him, it was driven in at him, came in at a height, kind of lobbing in. I think he knew what he was doing, wasn't he?
Because
he hit it straight away. Once he's chesting down, he's hit it straight away. Hell of a finish.
Unbelievable. And it kind of topped off the game. Now, Rory Higgins was really annoyed because I think that was well into the fifth minute when the referee had put up 3 minutes injury time. So where he got those extra 2 minutes, I don't know. Rory Higgins was fuming. But to be fair to Derry and Rory Higgins, and I know we give Bowes a lot of credit, but they deserve all the credit because they were brilliant last night. That second half, young lads as well. McGonagall got a great goal. And he's doing really, really good things up there. Obviously, there was the news, the owner selling the company last week, Stu, as well. So there's huge...
Didn't hear that, maybe.
Philip Darty's company for billions, I think he sold it for. So he's already said he's going to invest heavily in the club.
Wow.
Coming next year. Not just the first team academy, structures.
Wow.
Looking at the training grounds, the whole lot. He wants to do the whole job, and he wants Rory to be the man.
Well, this must have been on the see. This must have been a huge part of the move to bring in Rory.
I presume
there was negotiations happening. He probably felt very confident that this was happening,
and that he's the right man to do because Paddy McCourt is with him. Mark McChrystal's part of his staff as well, so the lads get it.
Well,
but Philip Darty, who loves the club and he's been pumping money into that club for as long as I remember, he's about to pump serious, and he's already put serious money into
the podcast.
He's going to help us as well.
You're joking. You're joking.
He's coming to the live event with Jim.
Who are you getting to do your contract? $500,000 a year. So what does Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher get at Sky Sports?
Well, where
are I reckon they're on about $3 or $4 million a year.
No. Keen,
I'm telling you now, Gary Neville is on about $3 or $4 million a year, probably a couple of million a year.
Well, Henri, the big news that time when Henri, when they brought him, wasn't he $1 million a year and he was shite?
Yeah, but like, I think they've gone for like.
But Neville and Carragher are amazing. Getting? I'd say King can get whatever he wants. He's gold.
They must be on a couple of million a year.
Are you at that point now where you're going to name your price?
Yeah, I actually am. Yeah, I'm at that point now where I want to start getting serious fucking money.
So that's the Derry thing, Stu. They were absolutely brilliant. And there's big plans, and they're certainly one to watch out for. But it was a brilliant game, 3-3. The last thing I want to touch on, and it's probably one of the most important things at the moment, and this is not to criticise anyone. This is actually, I want the conversation in terms of how, not that we can help the situation, but how, I don't know, how can we phrase the conversation in terms of that might be helpful to the people involved? Because at the moment, the referees and the managers and the coaches and the players, it's at an all-time low. I don't ever remember. And we obviously played for years, and you'd have your bickering with the referees, and you'd have your odd argument, and a fella would give you yellow and a fella give you the odd red, and you think, ah, he's a bit of a gobshite and he's this and he's that. But there was never a feeling as though we hated them. We needed them. You need the referees, right?
Yeah.
So we're all on the pitch together. You need them, right? The best referees, I always find, are the ones who you don't even notice.
Yeah. Are the ones that talk to you.
And the one, and the ones that talk to you.
Yeah.
And have a bit of a conversation, and there's a relationship there with you. I'm looking at the situation at the moment now, and more so with what's going on with the managers and the coaches and the amount of red cards. Like Derek Tomney last week, and this isn't just to pick out a name, Derek Tomney, he happens to be the ref to give 5 red cards last week. And I've looked at some of these red cards too.
Yeah.
And at least half, like 3 or 4 of them are not red cards. Like there was one down in Longford. Then he's barging the lad Han. Did you see that instant where he's barging him out of the way to give him the red card?
Yeah,
like he doesn't need to be doing that.
The narrative's starting to come into the referees.
There was one last week saying the cup game with Sam Bowen. Then Sam, he's saying Sam's the last man after 7 minutes. He's not, like, Paddy Barrett's running alongside him. So, like, look, you can nitpick on red cards. The point I'm trying to make is that because it's at such an all-time low here, and we need the refs, and we want the league to be as good as it can be, and the refs are included in that, why can't Tom Connolly is fronting up the refs. We wanted to bring Neil Doyle on here, and Neil wanted to come on, right? Just to talk. And people are saying, oh, you bring him on, you'd be criticising. That wasn't the case at all. We wanted to bring Neil Doyle on to give us their view and to give us their angle in terms of what they go through from a week-to-week basis and the effort and what they're putting into their training and getting themselves ready for a game, and give us their side of things and have an open and honest, frank discussion about things and try and improve whatever it is that needs to be improved. But at the moment, to me, from the outset, I might be wrong, but it looks like Tom Connolly heading up the refs and all the refs, rather than actually taking the criticisms or whatever it is on board. And I'm not saying it's all one way. I'm sure the players and managers are at fault as well. But instead of being bigger people about it and saying, look, let's have a conversation or discussion about this and that we need to improve it and all come together. Whereas I'm looking at the moment and it's like the refs are saying, are we getting stick? Are we getting criticism? Well, you know what? You shove it up and we'll show you.
Yeah, yeah. So it's
and that's terrible.
It is terrible, yeah. It's that sort of school teacher mentality, I suppose, as well, isn't it? I just wonder how much of an effect, again, the crowds coming back in is having now on the referees or on the decisions that are happening, right? But in my opinion, and I mentioned this last week in an article, it seems to me that referees have done a complete swing from if they're unsure about a decision, then, you know, like if you're unsure about a yellow card, don't give it. If you're sure about it, give it. Like, you know, if you're unsure about a red card, don't give it. You know, give a yellow card kind of thing. But and that's the way it kind of used to be. If you're unsure about a penalty, no penalty. You have to be definite. Like, you know, that's the way it used to be. It seems now it's completely erring on the other side of the extreme. Whereas you made a perfect point. Sam Bowen is, you know, there's still cover there. It's not a definite. It's not
never.
You know, if you're 100% sure he's last man, it's a sending off, then it's a red card. But how can you be 100%? You can't, because it's cover there. Surely his linesman see it. So what I'm trying to articulate is that referees have gone to the other extreme, and it's something. It's something I think has happened in other leagues around the world as well. Like, you know, the Premier League doesn't happen in European football because you get the quality and
example you're using in the Premier League, they've reined it back in. They took an awful lot of criticism.
So I agree. I totally agree with that.
They took it on board, and now
they're letting it flow.
And it's a better game.
Of course it is. So you have to. There's going to be tackle. Like, I mean, I don't want to get off the topic, right? Well, you have to. We have to go back to a system that only unless you're 100% sure it's a penalty, you give a penalty. Only unless you're 100% sure it's a red card, you give a red card. Otherwise, you have to, you know.
But that's on the side of caution. That's with the decision making, right? And that's fair enough. But the biggest problem, Stu, is the actual relationship between whatever the coaches and managers are out saying the line, Now, I don't know in terms of what the threshold is. If I'm a manager on the line, can I roar and shout all night? Can I give the referee abuse all night? Can I don't know in terms of at what stage do you say, okay, that's enough of that, now I need to pull you in or book you or whatever. But there's managers and coaches getting yellow cards. Like, Keith Long got a yellow card last night, right? And I'm sitting in the stand, I'm saying to myself, what is the point in giving a manager a yellow card? Yeah. You go over and you say, that's him. Enough of that.
Yeah.
And any more out of you, you will be gone off the line.
Yeah.
But what's the point in walking over and giving him a yellow card?
Yeah. Well, look, listen, I mean, I've had terrible run-ins in my career with referees, and I always felt referees played up to the crowd, and they would, you know, some of them would smell themselves. They always thought they were on show, like, you know, and in their own heads they convinced themselves that, well, this isn't about, you know, the 22 players that are playing. Like, you know, I have a part to play here. Like,
well,
you
that's
know,
the point Tim Clancy brought up in an interview.
Well,
it
happens, Alan. It does. I've seen it with loads of referees. Like, you know, they'd have a swagger about themselves, and they'd be giving out yellow cards just to kind of play up to the crowd. And all this kind of stuff. Like, the best referees I ever dealt with, Alan Kelly was excellent.
Alan
he was the best referee ever in this league. I think ever in this league. There was a referee called John McDermott.
Yeah, I remember John. Yeah,
he was incredible. Mm. Right, incredible referee. Back in the 90s and the 90s, and he actually got reprimanded by the referees. I think for being too lenient.
I was going to touch it for being too good.
And I'm telling you, and he lost. This is God's own truth. He lost his confidence, and he went down. He actually left the game. Then wouldn't do it anymore. And it was terrible to see him go. But Alan Kelly.
No, Alan was the best. Yeah.
Alan Kelly was top notch, right? And to be fair to
Paul Chute was always very good.
Yeah, Paul had a different style, but yeah, he was. I never remember him as being as bad as what we see now. Mm. But there's only once. Funny you should bring up the incident of maybe referees talking to players, whatever. I remember one pre-season, we were training up in the AUL. You might have been there. I don't know if you remember it. So it was 04, 05, that kind of period. It might have been 03, in around that time. Pat Kelly came in.
Yeah.
And sat down with us and talked us through the rule changes, because there were significant rule changes at the time. I think it was regards yellow cards and all that kind of stuff. Sat down in the anyone doesn't know the AUL dressing rooms. They're not like big, glorious, beautiful function rooms. They're tiny. They're like something you'd get in schoolboy level. Sat in with us, had a chat with us, and he was brilliant. Took it on board I thought it was very effective and it worked, but it only ever happened 1 year.
But that's the point, and that's the thing I'm trying to get across here, Stu, is that this isn't criticisms and he's no good and he's this. The problem that a lot of the managers, I feel, have with the situation at the moment is that they're not held accountable. So if the referees, like, there's managers' jobs on the line here, full-time jobs, people losing jobs, yet referees go out and make mistakes. Yet they're given a game the following Saturday with the same teams involved. And I'm looking, saying to myself, like, that can't be right. Is that the head of the referees or people involved antagonising teams now, even sending the same fella back? I don't think that's right.
Yeah.
And the issue I would have mostly with it is, now that it's at an all-time low, and it is, it's bad. It's really, really bad. I don't remember it ever as bad. Why can't whoever's looking after the referees, Tom or whoever it is, and we tried to speak to Tom, and why can't he get them all in a room and the people and say, look, fair enough, it's gotten out of hand, it's bad, the relationship's soured, it's not great, we need to pull this, rein it back in, we need to come together. And whoever be the bigger people involved in it, rein it in.
Because it's like anything, it's very difficult to admit when you're wrong. You know, it's a simple fact.
But do you not think for the good of the game, that's what needs to happen?
Absolutely. The biggest thing to do here would be to admit, listen, there's a problem here.
There's a major problem here.
Here's one. Let me throw it at you, right? Is the lack of a highlight show maybe affecting this?
No, I'll tell you what.
Here's two things I'll throw at you, right? The lack of a glow, in other words, Soccer Public is gone now, right? Now, listen, before people start fucking texting and going, oh, RT, it doesn't matter, right? Any kind of a highlight show, right? I'm finding at the moment, right, in order to see games, and it's very, or to see, highlights of things, you're scrubbing through things, and it's difficult. Like, you know, it's not the easy.
No, I'm going to stop you. I'll tell you why. Sure,
I know it's brilliant exposure, right?
No, the amount of things that the reason it's reared its head as well is because all these things are being highlighted because the incidents are on the LOI TV every week and all. So people are seeing the games and seeing all these mistakes and incidents, whereas before it might not have been the case. So that is one of the major reasons.
Oh, hang on a second. If there was ever an incident in the game, we would show that.
Yeah, but there is no problem.
In its own entity.
But you're saying people are not seeing it. They're still seeing it.
Have you evidence of that? Like, you think people are coming to you saying, like, I've seen that.
There's clips every week. Every single week from every match, there's a clip.
So here's my second point. So because you kind of fed me in, right? Exposure, right? So in other words, social media. Mm-hmm. I don't know, like, I'm trying to understand what this is all about, right? Okay, image, branding yourself, whatever the case may be, is that causing a fracture between not just players and referees, but supporters and players, okay? And I'm going to go back to the Bowes incident where the supporters picked on Danny Mandrew about for certain reason only. But that's
what do you mean a fracture?
Because that's social media exposing his lifestyle, okay? And they're clanging onto that, and they're having a pop at him for right?
Well, yeah.
So I'm trying to articulate this in a better way. What I'm trying to say is, what I mean by fracture, is there an indifference of understanding between players and how they should portray themselves on social media, or supporters and how they should portray themselves? Are referees gotten the hump now because players are getting, you know, what I'm trying to say is this overall image that's being portrayed through social media, overexposure, as you said, to a certain instance, people are pointing it out, people are being swayed by people's opinion
on social media. No, because I've watched the incidents and it's there for you to see with your own eyes. Yeah, so people aren't just putting up comments. I get your point on Twitter that people put up comments and you're swayed by just someone writing something, and that happens.
It's sheer nature.
Writing,
it's natural.
Idiots writing stuff.
Yeah, but it's not. But people listen to that, Alan. They do.
I know, that. But I'm saying on this one, though, it's actually clips taken from the match. This was the red card. This was the goal. So you can watch it and make up your own mind yourself. And that's what's happening in terms of, whereas before you might not have seen all the incidents, now you can see every incident. Every game is streamed. You can watch the games straight after people. There was two red cards last night. What was he sent off? Like, people are coming up with screen grabs and screenshots and all. Like, there was a couple of penalties there. The one down in Drogheda and Bowes a couple of weeks ago. Talbot, he's outside the box. The penalty's given, like. Like, some of the decisions are really bad.
Yeah.
They're really bad. And this isn't... The reason I wanted to have this chat, because we haven't discussed it before in the show, and plenty of people have had their say. The reason I wanted to have it with you, Stu, was because this isn't to criticise people. It's gone to the point where it's gone too far. The relationship is so bad now that I'm saying, you need to pull this together.
Yeah.
The referees and the managers and the coaches, because I'm looking at the moment and there's such a divide that I'm beginning to think the referees are saying, all right, they're all out to get us, are they? We'll show you. So they're going at it the opposite way. Instead of actually saying, okay, we need to fix this, lads. They're going out already annoyed and infuriated and saying, all right, well, that, like, you give us stick last week, we're going to nail you now.
A simple solution to all that. I mean, just all the relevant stakeholders have to get involved. And I hate using that word.
Because it's really bad.
That word, stakeholders. But, you know, if you have a manager's, I don't know whether we have a manager's association. There used to be. I don't know whether we do now. Easily solved. Managers have to meet up with the referees and say, what's going on? You know, quiet room somewhere in a hotel. Let's chat it out. Let's discuss it. You've got the PFAI representing the players. I'm sure they can go. They can, if there's an issue that's out of control, they can talk to the referees about it. And that's what it comes down to. It comes down to dialogue and communication. I don't mean dialogue and communication on the pitch in front of everybody. It needs to be just done during the week. Training sessions, maybe. Representative of the referee needs to go and have a yap. What's the problem?
Exactly.
Find out what the problem is and try and solve it.
And that's the point that I wanted to get across. And to be fair, you made a point earlier where you said people don't want to admit they're wrong. It's okay to actually come out and say, you know what? And I'm not saying they're at fault for everything. I'm sure the players are at fault for things. The manager are at fault for things, whatever. I'm sure they're all involved in it. But it's actually okay to come out and say, you know what? Maybe our standards have dropped. Maybe we haven't been as good. We're going to try and improve and get better on it, whatever. Like the Premier League thing you said, the example, they got slaughtered last year, referees, VAR, every match, this is a joke, this year they're getting praised. Managers are coming out saying, oh, the referees are doing great, they're letting things go, it's great, it's making for a better game. So, like, it's actually okay to come out and say, maybe your standards have dropped, instead of fighting fire with fire all the time.
Yeah. Oh, well, absolutely. I mean, there has to be, I mean, look, the obviously the Premier League, there's...
They took the criticism on board.
It's, yeah, they took criticism on board. It's a huge product. And, and obviously, if they feel that it, it's going to affect their product, they're going to do something about it, like, you know. Therefore, we need a, you know, we need a middleman here, or a middle woman here, or a middle committee here, someone step in, aka the FAI, and someone to come in and say, let's meet in a room and let's talk about it. Don't know whether that's happening, because I don't really know what the FAI do anymore, to be quite honest with you. And that's, again, sorry, I'm not being that, I didn't mean that to be sort of a nasty dig, like, you know, but I genuinely don't know what's going on in the FAI anymore. It's all very quiet, completely quiet, almost to the point where, now I know that they're certainly doing work in the background in terms of sponsorship, and like, if I have to look at what Jonathan Hill has achieved since he's come to the FAI, right, it would be they got the women's team sponsored by Sky. That's all I'd have to tell you.
The equal pay.
Equal pay. And is that not all, I mean, is that all not normal part of business? It's not an awful lot achieved, is it, in the time period?
Well, Dale said
18 months.
They've restructured the whole kind of the national, obviously underage structures, the academies, and that there's a team of people, like what Will was saying when we were here, working on the league now and stuff. Maybe no, the fact I, that it I, is quiet,
What I'm worried about is, right, what I'm worried about is this, and it's this. We've gotten rid of that gobshite, and it all solves itself. You know, that doesn't happen. Like, no. You know, it's not, because it's such a mess. But obviously, from League of Ireland terms, I'm always going to focus on that and say, what are you doing? What are you doing for the league here? What are you doing for the league here? But in general terms,
we're actually going to invite him on. We'll bring him.
It would
on.
Be nice to, you know, nice to talk to him. I don't think he'll come on, to be quite honest with you.
He might. We'll see. But anyway, I was glad we had that chat in the referees. We'll be interesting to see how it plays out and what happens. And it is at a pretty bad place, and you want it to get better, because we need the referees. You need the referees. Badly need the referees for the games to flow every week and to give us the enjoyment that we want.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially in the game here, like, you know, because it always felt that, you know, we don't have VAR. We're not under that scrutiny.
Harvey actually had a good game last night. I know there was the incident with the extra time. I don't know what went on there. But certainly the actual, in general, in the game, I actually turned around to Richie at one stage and said, the ref's doing quite well, isn't he? There was tackles going in, what you want to see. But he actually had a decent game. So anyway, that was episode 24, I think. Paul thinks it's 26. You think it's 73.
73.
But yeah, folks, listen out for, obviously, that live thing we're going to do in a couple of weeks. Jim Crawford, John O'Shea, any questions, get them in for us. And we will have a big live event in a few weeks that we'll have plenty to announce before that and let you know. But that was everything. Paul, thank you. As always, Stewie, thank you. And Benetti Menswear, we'll have you decked out in the nines. You will be decked out to the nines come Benetti. Our live event. With your guitar. Stewie's going to sing us out and all in the live event. The whole lot. That's all, folks. We will talk to you next week. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Cawley's Call, powered by Benetti Menswear. For more interviews like this, please subscribe to my podcast or follow on all my social media channels.